From Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network. Dr. Neil Patel from PricewaterhouseCoopers is interviewed by Gen's editor-in-chief John Sterling on how virtual research and development can increase innovation and transform the global pharmaceutical industry.
Dr. Neil Patel is director of pharmaceutical research and development at PricewaterhouseCoopers, a consulting firm. The company just released a report entitled Pharma 2020 Virtual R&D. Which path will you take? Neil, your new study contends that the pharmaceutical industry is at a pivotal point in its evolution, especially regarding R&D. How so?
I think everyone in the industry knows that the industry overall is at a pivotal point. I think with respect to R&D, if we think over the past 30 years, the industry has done a very good job of developing treatments for inflammatory diseases, CNS diseases, metabolic, et cetera, but using mostly pharmacology and chemistry. The ever-increasing role of payers and regulators has kind of shifted us away from treatments to preventions or cures. They're demanding a bit more as relates to innovation. So in essence, the payers, providers, and patients require this pivotal point to occur. They're bringing us here. And in search of innovation, I think that's what the pivotal point is about, discovering truly different and new drugs.
The report lists a number of key trends that are reshaping the pharmaceutical marketplace and posing a challenge to the pharmaceutical industry. Can you discuss these trends and why pharmaceutical professionals need to be aware of them?
Sure. Just to recap what's in the report as far as the seven trends and what we see. Number one, the burden of chronic diseases is soaring. The amount of folks living with diseases like cancer is increasing. Two, healthcare policymakers and payers are mandating what doctors can prescribe. The prescribing habits and decision-making is moving slightly away from physicians, and policymakers and payers are kind of running that agenda. The other trend is around a more pay-for-performance type model, which, again, driven by regulators and payers. The other piece around healthcare that's a trend that we're seeing is different forms of healthcare, a primary market and a secondary market. And clearly there's much more emphasis, at least in the U.S., on the specialty and specialist types of products. And then the developing world, where demand for medicines is growing over the next 13 plus years. And within that, the types of demand for medicines is highly varied. Another trend around governments beginning to focus on preventions rather than treatments. Although they're not investing heavily in preemptive measures, we believe that there's a trend towards more preventative types of treatments than we have today. And then finally, the other trend that we see, and I don't think anyone's going to be shocked by this, is that the regulators are becoming more risk-averse. So what does this mean to folks in the industry, pharmaceutical professionals who work in the industry? I think no matter where they sit in the organization, these trends impact the R&D division and how they approach research and development, impact the manufacturing divisions, the supply chain. We brought up the developing world and the need for medicines there. Clearly, that's going to have an impact on the supply chain. And then finally, the sales and marketing divisions. I mean, you know, this is the environment that they will be launching products into and selling into and operating in.
The study also notes that by 2020, the pharma R&D process may be shortened by two-thirds, success rates increased, and clinical trial costs cut substantially. This certainly projects a more optimistic picture for pharma than is currently the case. Which factors will be responsible for this potential revolution in pharmaceutical R&D?
We do have a fairly optimistic view for the industry. It's one that we hope comes to fruition. Some of the factors that we believe will enable this revolution are around a tighter collaboration with payers, providers, and regulatory agencies, and their ability to recognize that they have a shared goal and that they align their motivations and encourage adaptation of their current roles into new roles to basically bring more medicines to market and more innovative medicines. So that's a key factor, collaboration. I mean, that's a word that we use throughout our report, and I think one that hopefully folks will consciously use more often. The other is a kind of what we call a seismic shift in the R&D process and approach, which really uses computer-based models to virtualize the process, both in research and in clinical development. So another factor being, you know, virtual-based R&D. And then finally, a key factor would be a greater use and understanding of human biology and pathophysiology. I think those three factors will enable increased success rates, decreased costs, and shortened timelines.
Would you describe the current pharma research process and what it might look like once robust computer models of the entire human body are available?
In a nutshell, the current research process in the early research around models in vivo and in vitro that kind of simulate a particular tissue or organ. So this is extremely helpful in understanding how a drug candidate affects that particular tissue or organ. But if we had a model of kind of the entire human body or organ systems, researchers will be able to understand kind of knock-on effects. So an example, if you're modeling a drug candidate in the renin-angiotensin system in the kidney, what's the impact then on the serotonin pathway in the brain, if any? Right now, the research process is pretty clear, and we have a fair amount of confidence on affecting the renin-angiotensin system in the kidney and affecting the kidney. But we're not sure what that might do to the brain, the intestine, et cetera, et cetera. So I think the current process is testing in tissues and organs, but robust computer models of the entire body will help us understand the larger impact of drug candidates in the body.
Let's jump ahead to the year 2020. Paint the picture of the potential research process 12 years from now.
I think there's a couple things around the research process years out from now. I think the one key theme and change is that it will be more predictive than it is today. Two, again, that theme I touched on earlier around collaboration with payers and providers and the regulatory authorities is going to be much more prevalent in a different type of relationship that we see today. So back to the predictive piece of research 12 years from now, I think that predictability is going to be enabled by the use of more validated computer-based models for ADME studies. So we'll be fairly confident in how a drug moves through the body through computer-based models, and we can simulate that. We'll be in a better position to do toxicology studies in computer-based models. Again, increasing the predictability and confidence of the data. In development, I think predictability will increase through more extensive use of adaptive clinical trial designs, as well as if we go back to the concept of a virtual man or a greater understanding of human biology, I think it'll be clear the mechanism of action of a particular agent. Mechanism not only in the disease state it's affecting, but also throughout the body. So I think 12 years from now, it's just going to be more predictive. And I think there's going to be technologies that will come forward or that are in development even today as we speak that will help in that predictability. And finally, I think the other large change we predict we'll see in the future is submission of a product using a live license. So in essence, a limited marketing approval for a drug in a small patient population that's tightly controlled and essentially running in a clinical trial in that patient population and gaining an understanding and use of that drug in that patient population and then leveraging that information to expand the use of the drug.
My final question. Can you talk a bit more about the nature of the changes emerging in technology in the business environment that will provide pharma with new strategies to compete successfully in the future and on a global basis?
I think the changes in emerging technologies is around enabling research. And I think what we had said in the paper and probably a lot of the response to the questions that you were asking, which is building models, computer-based models, to simulate drug effects within an organ or an organ system or the body. So I think that is going to be the largest amount of change that we're going to see in emerging technologies. I think in clinical research, there's going to be a greater use of semantic technologies to basically troll through a mine through vast amounts of data that we might have in a particular disease state or a particular drug. And the way I think of that is if we could go back and really leverage all the information that we've learned about inflammation from the time aspirin was born till today, I think those that are working on anti-inflammatory diseases would be at a much greater advantage than those working in disease states that don't have drugs kind of as old as aspirin. So I think those technologies are the ones that are going to be emerging. And I think pharma as an industry and companies individually will be in a business environment where I think there's going to be a bit more confidence in the research and development process because there is more information to leverage, better decision making.
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. If you would like to comment on this week's podcast, please go to our podcast section at www.genengnews.com and give us your thoughts. We'd really like to hear from you. Bye for now.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. New GenCasts are posted every week, Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghaus saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week to the GenCast Network.